2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
A new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Oh, for the week of Thanksgiving, we have such a packed show. We are going to go back to Colorado Springs in about 30 minutes from now. KSL 5 Television's Dan Ruscone has insights and the interview with that Army veteran that police are calling a hero, Dave. He sprung into action at Club Q on Saturday night. Took down the shooter.
An absolutely incredible story, Debbie. And I just thought, I was so grateful that his training kicked in. And I can't even imagine how many lives he saved by jumping into action. It's 9:07, and we're going to hear from him. It's 9:07. It's time for the launch.
Sequence engaged.
Here are three things that Debbie wants you to know.
Countdown. Three.
In fact, Dave, he was there with his daughter at Club Q, and his daughter's boyfriend. And Fox News is reporting that the boyfriend was killed by gunfire. But this Army vet hears the gunfire, goes into military mode, dunks the gunman onto the floor. He grabbed him by the back of his bulletproof vest, threw him to the ground, and the fight was on.
I saw the flash. I dove, pushed my buddy down. I grabbed him by the back of his little cheap armor thing. And I pulled him down. And then I started wailing on this dude. And I'm on top of him. I'm a big dude, man. And this guy was bigger. And I just kept wailing on him.
Wow. What a description, Debbie. But how unique it is to have that kind of training so that when the chaos starts, that he knows what to do. The rest of us, we have no idea how we would react. But when you have that kind of training, you are uniquely prepared, and I am so grateful that he was there, willing, and trained.
Countdown to...
Right at the top of the 10 o'clock hour, we're going to take you live to Washington, D.C. For the inside scoop, did you hear about this looming rail strike? There's this influential union, this rail union, giving Biden's broker deal to avert a strike. The thumbs down. It's like, eh, oops. Good thing Santa uses a sleigh and reindeer to get gifts to Utah children. Otherwise,
sure he does.
This talk of a railway strike would really worry me about supply chain issues around the holidays, if you know what I mean.
I'm glad you're very glass of milk half full here, because Deb, that sleigh and reindeer, I'm not sure they're going to be able to pick up the problems and fix this supply chain issue. But, yeah, this was a very big deal that President Biden had brokered the deal to avoid the strike. And now they're backing up. They're like, not so fast. We don't like the deal after all.
Launch countdown one.
We're going to begin this morning with the Respect for Marriage Act. It is moving forward. It is legislation that would recognize any marriage between two people, opposite or same sex. Well, Utah Senator Mike Lee has some concerns.
Mr. President, let's do this the right way, not the wrong way. We need to protect religious freedom.
The concern is that if you're a religious institution, you may face consequences if you refuse to marry a same-sex couple in your place of worship.
Dave and Janovic.
The launch.
Commence.
KSL's top national story. Special coverage with Dave and Janovic.
Some of these concerns were also brought up by Senator Ted Cruz, Dave, and you were listening to Senator Ted Cruz's podcast, right?
Yeah, and I think this was part one of a couple parts, and really it echoes the concerns that Senator Mike Lee has.
Any charity that believes marriage is the union of one man and one woman,
any charity that does not embrace same-sex marriage. This bill is designed to strip their 501c3 status, to persecute the churches and universities and schools and charities.
And when he says any charity, just to clarify, churches are viewed as charities by the government. So when he says charities,
he's referring to churches.
He's talking about churches.
Then enters Senator Mark Warner, a Democrat from Virginia, thinks that these concerns are all a stall tactic. So let's listen to what he said about it.
Some of the opponents want to do everything they can to run out the clock. I would, again, urge people of goodwill to look not only at the Mormon Church, but look at all of the church organizations that have felt that religious freedom is protected. There is nothing in this bill that would require any faith to marry anyone that they don't want married in their house of worship.
This was Senator Warner on Fox News, a Sunday morning show. He mentioned the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints twice as religious institutions that supported this bill. Now, I just wanted to clarify a little bit, because that is what is being said often, is that, hey, the Mormon Church supports this bill.
I've heard that.
This is what they said in this statement. It said, marriage is between a man and a woman, and that will remain unchanged. We're grateful that the law includes appropriate religious freedom protections. And then they said, while respecting the law and preserving the rights of our LGBTQ brothers and sisters, they said this approach is the way forward. You'll notice that they didn't say this bill is the way forward. They said this approach is the way forward, really pointing back to the fact that there are some rights for the LGBT brothers and sisters being protected, as well as religious freedom protections.
So let's go back to Senator Mike Lee, Utah Senator Mike Lee, echoing Senator Cruz's concerns that if a religious institution refuses to perform a same-sex marriage, that the church will be stripped of their tax-exempt status. And that is a big financial deal. That is a big financial deal. Let's listen to what Senator Mike Lee said.
They shouldn't be able to punish religious belief. That's all I want, a protection saying the federal government may not punish any individual or entity based on a religious or moral conviction-based belief about marriage. That is not too much to ask.
Senator Lee, now let's remember, he has offered an amendment. They call it the Lee Amendment. I heard it uttered on national news, the Lee Amendment, that he believes will strengthen religious freedom, preventing the government from revoking a church's tax-exempt status.
Yeah, and I think really that is the big concern, is that if a religious institution has a different policy or they have a different belief, that the government wouldn't be able to come in and really punish them by stripping away their tax-exempt status. So essentially, it leaves churches to run autonomously without the threat of the government coming in and dictating doctrine.
Okay, straight ahead, we are going to get into the legal aspect of this. Ask KSL legal analyst Greg Skordas to phone the show. Are Senator Lee and Senator Cruz's concerns legit? That conversation in 4 minutes.
Dave and Degenovic. KSL's top national story, special coverage with Dave and Dujanovic.
Dave, do you moonlight as a lawyer?
I do not.
Neither do I.
I do not.
So thankfully, we're going to get KSL legal analyst Greg Skordas on the line in just a moment, because we're talking about this Respect for Marriage Act, that Congress has been debating. It has really kind of stalled out. I mean, it's suspended in thin air right now back in the Senate. Senator Mike Lee has been very vocal that he has some concerns with this legislation.
It labels people of good faith as bigots and subjects them to endless harassing litigation and discrimination and threats by that same government that was founded to protect their religious liberty.
Now, Dave, you also caught a discussion on Fox News with Senator Mark Warner, who's a Democrat out of Virginia. And stop short, he wasn't attacking Lee necessarily, but he was certainly kind of accusing him of using stall tactics.
Yeah, yeah, trying to
run
slow this
clock.
Yeah, and I'm not exactly sure what clock it is.
I wasn't sure either. Like, can't they just revisit it in 2023?
part of what Senator Warner really wanted to focus on is there was a procedural vote that really passed, I don't want to say overwhelmingly, that 62 votes, I think. They had the bipartisan support for the Respect for Marriage Act. And the bill, and the reason Senator Warner thinks he got, or, and they have these this bipartisan support, is that the bill offers religious freedom protections.
Is there were greater protections for religious freedom put in. And so you see the Mormon Church, you see a number of mainstream Protestant denominations, you see a series of other faith organizations actually support this marriage equality law. And this, remember, this marriage equality law is not only about same-sex marriage, but it also validates something that literally 60 years ago in my state of Virginia was illegal, which was interracial marriage.
Now, Senator Warner may have taken maybe one step further than the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has taken. They don't necessarily... They haven't said they support the bill specifically. They have said that this approach is the way forward. But we want to bring on the real expert.
The real attorney. The real attorney. Lawyer. Hi, Greg.
Hi, good morning, you guys.
Greg Skordis, our legal analyst here at KSL. Also hear him quite frequently from 7 to 9 on our new show, KSL at Night. So... All of us know a same-sex or interracial couple. I mean, I know several same-sex or interracial couples, Greg, that are married. So why is a federal law needed? Let's start there.
Well, it's needed in part because there has been some hint, Debbie, from the Supreme Court, especially from Justice Clarence Thomas, that we should revisit the decision that was that they entered in 2015, which effectively overturned the Defense of Marriage Act, and would I know I'm not explaining this very well, which would allow that maybe states could outlaw same-sex marriage. And I think Congress is trying to get on top of that and say, no, wait, we're going to codify this into federal law now so that the issue is settled.
It was interesting, as you bring up Justice Clarence Thomas, because I believe it was in, was it the Dobbs case overturning Roe v. Wade,
yeah,
where this was kind of hinted at from Justice Clarence Thomas about the same reasoning that you're using here might apply to interracial or same-sex marriages. Can you dive into that a little bit deeper? Because it is a little strange. I remember when I was reading this from Justice Thomas, Justice Thomas is in an interracial marriage. So the fact that he would bring up the question mark about interracial marriages, I thought, boy, this is really interesting that he would dive into this.
Yeah, and so what he's really saying, Dave, and I think you spelled it out real well, is that, look, under the Dobbs decision, we took federal sort of constitutional protections for abortion away and said, look, this is a state issue. And he's saying maybe states should be able to decide same-sex marriage within their state or interracial marriage within their state. Maybe states should have the right to outlaw that. And the Congress is getting on top of this. And like you said earlier, I think Debbie said that with bipartisan support to say, look, federal legislation is going to come in and protect those rights. And they have 62 senators on board. That number is very significant because it gets you over the filibuster that's required in the Senate. The House is already shown its hand a little bit and said that they're on board. So this could very well be a federal legislation quite soon. And without belaboring it too much, Mike Lee just wants to sort of carve out a religious exception so that churches don't get sued if they say, wait a minute, we're recognizing same-sex marriage, but we don't have to perform those in our churches.
Okay, Greg. So let's play the what-if game. I know every good attorney loves the what-if game. So here's the scenario, Greg.
That they can't bill for. Even better.
Yeah.
This is a what-if game you can't bill for. Okay, ready to
okay.
go.
So what happens then? Same-sex couple wants to get married in the Salt Lake Temple. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints says, no, we can't perform that marriage, that ceremony. Would this federal law prevent them or protect them from being sued for denying to perform a same-sex marriage, or any church that denies a same-sex couple the right to marry at that church?
That's a nuance, Debbie, that that Congress and Mike Lee are trying to close up so that doesn't happen. That's a great question, and it's the question that's looming, and it's the lawsuit that's definitely coming. So I think some of our senators and congressmen are saying, wait a minute, let's protect groups based on their religious beliefs from being sued if they think within their religious culture that they don't have to perform these ceremonies, just exactly like you described. So there's going to be some carve out for religious freedom in this bill, I believe, by the time it ultimately gets passed.
Can you explain why these charities / churches would lose their tax exempt status?
Well, that sort of goes to anything, Dave. When a religion chooses not to follow the law, then they lose their tax-exempt status. So I think Congress is trying to say, wait a minute, we don't want to have that sort of a draconian punishment just for religious freedom. I mean, we still have the First Amendment, which really trumps just about everything. And so we want to carve out some exception to make sure that doesn't happen, that they don't lose their tax-exempt status, that protection is built into the bill at the time it's passed.
Greg Skordas, thanks so much for joining us. Greg's our KSL legal analyst, joins us quite often here on the show. You can also hear him at KSL at night, where he is often hosting a relatively new show from 7 to 9. Thanks a million, Greg. I was thinking as he was talking, we were talking lawsuits, how long a case like that would potentially be tied up in the courts and then would ultimately wind its way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and then we wait another 6 months to hear if the Supreme Court takes the case, and then the argument. And I mean, you're talking years.
Yeah.
Years of litigation.
Part of what I think is really encouraging about what is going on here, Debbie, is so often the president, whoever it is, whether it's Joe Biden, Donald Trump, Barack Obama, they have not shown the patience to let Congress figure this out on their own and pass legislation. So what does the president do? They come in, they take executive action, they pass an executive order, and then it's the law of the land through executive order. Well, then it gets challenged and it ends up at the Supreme Court. This is the way it's supposed to work. Congress is supposed to figure this out. They're supposed to hash it out. They're supposed to add these amendments, and that is the law of the land instead of the president unilaterally deciding what the law of the land is. So I think we should look at this and be very excited that, number one, Congress is doing their job. Number two, that they're working together to do so, which is just a breath of fresh air.
Great take, Dave. Great take. Straight ahead. Did you hear about the Army vet this morning on Utah's Morning News at the nightclub with his daughter in Colorado Springs, Club Q? Hears gunfire, jumps into military mode, dunks the gunman to the floor by the back of his bulletproof vest, and is alive to tell the story. Now, he says, I'm not a hero. I'm no hero because 5 people died. Straight ahead, we're going to get a live report from KSL 5's Dan Rascone, who is still in Colorado Springs covering this story, and hear more from the Army vet that police say is a hero.
I saw the flash. I dove, pushed my buddy down. I grabbed him by the back of his little cheap armor thing, and I pulled him down. And then I started wailing on this dude. And I'm on top of him. I'm a big dude, man. And this guy was bigger. And I just kept wailing on him.
Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM at 1160 AM.
I really want to hear from the Army vet, the Army veteran. He went to Club Q in Colorado Springs on Saturday night with his daughter's wife and his daughter's boyfriend and left there a hero, Dave. He springs into action as he hears the gunfire. Grabbing the mass shooter, he says, by the back of his body armor, slamming him to the ground.
I saw the flash. I dove, pushed my buddy down. I grabbed him by the back of his little cheap armor thing, and I pulled him down. And then I started wailing on this dude. And I'm on top of him. I'm a big dude, man. And this guy was bigger. And I just kept wailing on him.
I can't help but think about the training that he received as an Army veteran and how much that must have helped and kicked in in this chaotic moment.
Three tours in Iraq, one tour in Afghanistan. Do you think this guy knows what he's doing in the heat of battle or what? I'm looking forward to our next conversation with Army veteran Braden Wayman. He's calling the show in about 10 minutes, and I'm going to ask him how long the training sticks with them. Is this like a lifelong thing that you go around with? Like, are you always looking over your shoulder, waiting for something to happen so you can jump into action? Or do you just stand down? I mean, I'm looking forward to that conversation. In a moment, we're going to talk live with Dan Roscoe of KSL 5 Television. He is still in Colorado Springs covering this developing story. But let me just let you know what I read this morning, Dave. Fox News is reporting that Richard Fierro was there, I think it was his wife, his daughter, with his daughter and his daughter's boyfriend, and that his daughter's boyfriend was killed.
He was one of the five dead.
That's what Fox News was reporting this morning. He told the reporters that everyone inside the club became family to him when the bullets started to fly.
I just know I got into mode and I needed to save my family. And that family was, at that time, everybody in that room. And that's what I was trained to do. I saw him and I went and got him. I tried to save people and I didn't work for five. Okay, there's five people that aren't home right now. And I thank God, and it's Thanksgiving. I went through this at Thanksgiving in Iraq, man. We lost the dudes.
Just, you can just feel that desperation in his voice. Dan Roscoe joins us right now from KSL 5 Television. Dan is in Colorado Springs, has been following this story. Dan, Richard says, don't call me a hero, but how can we not?
Yeah, good morning, Dave and Debbie. Boy, this is just the story that we've been waiting to hear since this whole thing happened, because police have been telling us about this guy and kind of what he did, but we never really learned a lot of the details until last night. I mean, he's talking to the media last night outside of his home, describing exactly what happened there. And as you heard from some of the sound bites there, I mean, this shooter came in firing right away. I mean, as soon as he entered that nightclub, he was shooting. While people were running for their lives, here you have Richard Fierro run towards the gunfire and putting his life in danger. I mean, as you mentioned, he had his daughter there. He had his wife there, his daughter's boyfriend, who was Raymond Grievance. He was one of the ones, unfortunately, that was killed. But he was trying to save his family not only being his immediate family there, but also considering everybody at the club his family. But as you heard there, I mean, this veteran, Army veteran, just jumped into action, trained. It said he to go towards the fire or go towards the shots. And that's exactly what he did. And for him to be able to describe kind of what he did, you know, we don't know the size of the gunman, but this guy, you know, is pretty good size, Richard. He's not a small dude. And for him to be able to say, well, this guy was bigger than I was, almost, you know, kind of thing. So this gunman must have been pretty good size. And to get him, throw him down to the ground, end up grabbing his rifle and then beating him with his rifle and then getting others to help jump in and, you know, kick him and that kind of thing. What a bravery, because there would have no question, you know, according to investigators and everybody else, there would have been many more people killed if he didn't do what he did.
Dan Roscoe is joining us right now from KSL 5 Television. And Dan, do we have a timeline? Do we know how much time transpired or passed? Because the devastation was massive, 5 killed, 25 injured. Do we know how long it was before Richard was able to subdue the gunman?
Well, we know that the gunman or the police got the call at 11:56 on Saturday night. And so he must have entered in, and it was all over by 12:02. So that gunman had at least, I mean, you know, some time to start shooting. We had five people shot and killed, and then we had 17 shot with gunshot wounds that were injured, two others that were injured without gunshot wounds. Some of those that were hit with gunshots, I talked to a mother yesterday, one of the victims whose daughter was hit, and then her daughter's partner was hit three times. And so you're talking about some of these victims with multiple gunshot wounds. So obviously there was time. I mean, there was time that transpired. We don't know exactly, you know, how quickly, but it sounds like he, you know, acted as quickly as he could to kind of get his bearings and go towards the guy. But it took a little bit of time to take him down. But again, there was probably several minutes there where that guy was firing away.
Dan, before we let you go, and you probably heard we're going to have a Utah Army veteran call the show in about 5 minutes or so, because I want to ask him how long this training sticks with them. Because Richard Fierro's story there at Club Q just wowed me. I mean, it sounds like he was using everything he had at his disposal. Listen to this, to stop the gunman. I want to listen.
I'm yelling, 911, somebody call 911. Guy's trying to wiggle. He's trying to get his ammo, his guns. And I told her, kick this guy. And she took her high heel and stuffed it in his face.
So it sounds like he's using other nightclub patrons to help with keep this guy down.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously these guys are trained to stop the threat and stop it immediately. And that's exactly what he did. And you use whatever resources are possible. I would assume that's part of your training, because he didn't have a weapon on him. He didn't have any kind of you know, military gear or anything on him. So you, I would assume they're trained. Just, you know, the many stories that I've done with many of these military individuals, you know, you're trained to use whatever you have around you to stop the threat and to stop the individual. Yeah. And that's exactly what he was doing. He was getting others to help. And there's another guy that was being named also a hero, because he really jumped in there after Richard kind of took him down and helped Richard. But yes, he was using other resources.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's, I tell you what, Dan, even if it's a stiletto, stiletto, you know, you do whatever it takes. Dan, your reporting has been amazing. Thanks so much for jumping on the line live with us here. We know you'll be reporting more information on that case throughout the day at KSL 5 Television. You're looking forward to the conversation with Braden, Dave. What do you want to ask him?
Yeah, I really want to know. When something like this happens, how should I react? I don't know what the emergency plan is. I don't know what the safest, most appropriate thing for me to do. And I think the training that our military receives is maybe different than what you and I would do,
sure,
right? Obviously,
you would hope.
But at the same time, when we talk about running and hiding and fighting, I have no idea how to fight or what to do. And I think it will be very interesting to get an idea from somebody that has been trained.
I also want to know from Braden, how long does this instinct stay with you? Is it embedded in you so deeply by the U.S. military that once you're at battle, in battle, you never forget the tactics? That conversation straight ahead.
Dave and Dujanovic.
You can catch info anywhere.
But KSL News Radio is a dependable source.
We invite you to join us weekdays between 5 and 9.
Tim Hughes and Amanda Dixon.
Utah's morning companions for news.
Dave and Dujanovic.
Continuing with Dan's thought there, he's talking about the hero. We'll call him a hero. In Colorado Springs, his name is Richard Fierro. He served three tours in Iraq. One in Afghanistan. He's an Army veteran, goes to a Club Q with his daughter, wife, his daughter's boyfriend. By the way, the boyfriend we just heard from, Dan Rascone of KSL 5 Television, he was shot and killed in that shooting. Richard doesn't want to be called a hero. He says, I don't want to be called a hero because five people died. But this guy, Dave, sprung into action and took the shooter down by the back of his body armor.
I just know I got into mode and I needed to save my family. And that family was, at that time, everybody in that room. And that's what I was trained to do. I saw him and I went and got him. I tried to save people and I didn't work for five. Okay? There's five people that aren't home right now. And I thank God, and it's Thanksgiving. I went through this at Thanksgiving in Iraq, man. We lost the dudes.
Oh, man. Debbie, it makes me think. A couple of shootings that have happened recently. This one, the mall shooting, where it was somebody there. It wasn't waiting for the police to come in. It was a good Samaritan. It was a hero just standing alongside everybody else that stepped in and stopped the massacre. And then you look at what happened in Uvalde, where we waited for police to show up and the tragedy was just disastrous. I think of the heroes that are willing to step up in the moment in just seconds and protect and save lives. It's just incredible.
Braden Wayman, first of all, thank you for your service. Army veteran yourself, living here in Utah. It's not your first time calling the show. We appreciate you calling in right now. When I heard this story this morning unfolding, Braden, I thought of you, and I thought, maybe Braden can tell us how long this type of training stays with our veterans.
Yeah, hi, good morning. Yeah, I don't think so. When I first came home, you recognize these things that are just different, crowded places, loud noises, things that will never leave you. And then through therapy and other things, you learn to kind of use those to your advantage in a way.
How so? How does that work? So if you go into a crowded area and noises that Debbie and I would probably just dismiss. What do you hear? What do you see when you go into a crowded area?
Oh, so a perfect example. Yesterday, I went to the beer bar at noon to watch the World Cup soccer game. I've never been to that establishment. I was going by myself. It was just a regular day. Without even thinking, the first step that happens is they check your ID. And the person that checked my ID, I could tell was professional. He really checked things. That gave me a good feeling. And then I walk in and the place is packed. There's noises, people cheering. The first thing I did was kind of just take a quick scope of the room. I noticed that there was a bathroom in the back, signs that said patio is open. And there was also an adjoining room to the Bar X right next door. You know, when I first came home, that would have overwhelmed me with all those people. But just those things, and I didn't even think about it, but you just see, like, oh, there's a bathroom in the back. There's a patio. The guy seems to be knowing what he's doing. That's checking the thing. So let's go in and have fun.
Braden,
those are some of the things that the veterans will do.
Braden,
I want to
go back to this Club Q scenario and Richard Fierro, the Army veteran that grabbed the suspect by the back of his body armor, his body worn armor, threw him to the ground, started beating on him. He said something. He's quoted in a Fox News report. He said it's a reflex. Go to the fire. Stop the action. Stop the activity. Don't let no one get hurt. Is that how veterans, it sounds like that's how you're trained, is not to retreat all the time, but to go in when somebody needs to be saved.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, the Army, the military never teaches you to run away. They teach you to fight through, whether it be an ambush in Mosul, Iraq, if it's a building that you need to get into. The first step is overwhelming the threat, stopping the threat immediately. So the run, hide, fight, that, you know, that's up to the experts.
But that's not the military way.
No, and I'm sure the hero, I'll call him a hero in Colorado Springs, recognized that, you know, the sound of gunfire was probably the first thing. And then he scanned the room to identify the threat. He saw the threat was wearing the body armor that me and him have worn for countless hours. And we all know that there's this strap handle on the back because they're heavy. So when you're not wearing it, there's this thick handle on the very back of it. And without even thinking, he knew that he could grab that handle and control the threat.
Obviously, even when you're trained versus untrained, there's still fear. How do you push through that fear?
I don't think you realize it until it's over. I think because you can tell in the interview, and nothing but respect for the guy. You can tell he's still worked up. He's still processing what happened. The adrenaline has been going through. So I bet without even thinking, he was able to subdue that shooter. And then once everything was clear, then everything processed. The adrenaline was wearing off. And
that's when it sounds like he starts asking, hey, somebody call 911, 911. And then he figured he needed a little help. He said the guy was just as big, if not bigger, than he was. And he said, I'm a big guy, and this guy is even bigger. And then it sounds like somebody just came over and shoved a high heel or a stiletto in the alleged gunman's face. So it goes to whatever resource you have, you use it in the moment. Again, something you're used to as an Army vet, he's probably used to as well.
Exactly. They never taught us to fight fair. They taught us to fight to win. And one of the things also that stuck out to me was that he noticed that the shooter had two weapons. He had the long rifle that he told the person to kick away. And then he also took the sidearm from the subject and issuing, you know, commands for help. And it sounds like there is a group of people there that all deserve our utmost praise. And I hats off to that veteran for controlling that situation and saving lives.
Braden Waveman, thank you for lending us your expertise and giving us some insight into why this Army vet would have reacted this way. Because I think a lot of us are in awe of how they
Did you notice that Braden said, I've listened to the interview, he still sounds like he's amped up.
Yeah.
No doubt. It still has the adrenaline going. But knew what to do in that moment after three tours in Iraq, one in Afghanistan. You heard from Dan Rascone. He did not have a weapon on him when he went to Club Q with his daughter, his wife, and his daughter's boyfriend. Just manhandled the gunman.
Dude. Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Well, there's this threat of a railroad strike. I can never say those two words together. Railroad strike.
It's a lot of R's.
It's a lot. I've never been able to do it well. Railroad strike. I'm super glad, so thrilled and relieved that Santa uses a sleigh to deliver the packages and reindeer. Otherwise, I'd say we'd be in really big trouble when it came to Christmas gifts, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
It's a little tougher than that, Deb. Santa takes care of Christmas only. Everywhere else, that is the railroad.
I just don't want the little ears listening to worry at all about supply chain issues. With this looming threat, there's this influential railroad worker union, RRR worker union, voting against President Biden's brokered labor deal. They took the vote yesterday, and they're like, eh. So it raises the prospect of a railway strike just before the holidays. Could give us a new supply chain scare.
Yeah, and I think this has a big surprise. Obviously, this is the busiest time of the season, you know, of the year. Everyone is shipping mm-hmm. all over the world. And President Biden stepped in, I think it was in September,
right.
and he said, you know what, we can't have this. Let's figure something out. And it seemed like they had a good compromise.
Yeah, I thought everybody was giving it a thumbs up, Justin Finch. Justin Finch with ABC News. He's in Washington, D.C. Thanks for giving us a brief on this situation. So what do you know about it, Justin?
Well, first off, we're hoping the reindeer don't strike here. That would be too much just before the holidays.
Oh, no.
kind of as you said here, we thought we were close to a deal back in September. Now, as they're ratifying this contract here, all 12 unions who've now finished this process, we had 8 voting in favor, 4 voting against. And among them was this Smart TD union. They split on this. The train and engine side rejected the deal. The Yardmasters did. But either way, that still does tie up the progress towards achieving a deal. So now the deadline for an agreement agreement moves to December 9th. That is the last day before a strike can be avoided. The White House saying they're watching this very closely and also planning and preparing for all possible outcomes and still urging both sides here to work in good faith. Now, the other issue here is, too, is that this will greatly constrict the time for not only talks to occur, but for Congress to act. They're due back in session November 29th. We're talking about running up against that December 9th timeline. Meantime, a strike could cost the U.S. economy about $2 billion a day, delaying the shipments of goods across the country, and again, just before the holidays, and also impacting some commuter travel as well on the Amtrak rails. So Congress here could step in, could intervene, call for a cooling off period for further talks, or kind of force the workers to work under that labor deal framework that was already on the table. No one wants Congress to get involved. The hope is that they can come to a deal on their own, but we'll see.
What are some of the biggest concerns from the labor side?
We know that ongoing, their issue has been not only pay, but time off for sick leave and to care for ill family members. A big breaking point for this, of course, was COVID-19. A lot of people there not only directly impacted, but had to take time off to take care of their loved ones and found themselves suffering a great cost at work as a result. Because the railroads are a 24/7 ongoing industry, the rail companies are saying they can't really afford to take many breaks and have extended leave, but the labor unions say, well, you fired so many people and now your profits are up very high and we're paying the cost.
Okay, so worst case scenario, if they do strike, I think of things like pushing us into or over the edge into a recession, if we, another supply chain shortage. I mean, I don't want to have to fight people for toilet paper again, Justin.
Those are things that, of course, are being thought about right now. A real logistic strain. This would be on the country as well. These warehouses only have so much supply to meet out over the next coming weeks to months. So things like chemicals for like chlorine to treat water or even carbon dioxide for beer and soda, that would be tied up. Fuel being transferred from coast to coast, that would be tied up. In addition to clothing, electronics, everything else could be at a standstill if nothing is done. There are not enough trucks, I understand, or enough barges that can take on the weight here because the rail system is still so critical in how we move goods from coast to coast.
Well, after you said that, I've now just ordered 100 gallons of Diet Coke. So, you know, the run has begun. Explain to me, how does Congress step in and prevent this? What is their authority and how do they, I guess, maybe make the move?
Well, because this is a crucial lever for the country and the economy, they do have...
Well, it's like interstate transportation or something like that. They start delving into it when that comes to a standstill, Justin.
Right. And this is something we have not seen since the 90s, for them to step in this way. And even at that point in 92, it was boiled down to a two-day work stoppage, nothing beyond that. The last major one we saw was almost 100 years ago, back in 1926. The hope is that we don't get back to that point. But given those events as precedent, this gives Congress pretty much the drive to get in there earlier than later to make some kind of difference. We do know that this is right on the edge of the changeover in power in Congress. But the thought is that if it comes to that, that both sides could pull together and make something happen to prevent this. But really, the White House, transportation, labor, all these offices in the cabinet are really hoping to come to the table and strike a deal that does not involve Congress or does not bring the nation to perhaps an economic or logistical breaking point.
Justin Finch, thank you for joining us. ABC News correspondent out of Washington.
Yeah, I was shocked to hear this story this morning that was developing. I heard it, you know, Tim and Amanda were talking about it, and I thought President Biden gave us a two thumbs up that this was a done deal. We're moving forward. The threat of a railway strike was over. And I hate to even admit this. I always forget, like, how important the railroads still are
to getting stuff to us.
Yeah, if you're driving on I-15 and you see all the semi-trucks
behind all the semi-trucks. I'm like, well, I guess I should stop buying things if I don't want to get stuck behind a semi-truck. But the railways are important, too.
That is one trailer.
Right.
Now, imagine that one trailer and you put it onto a train and it gives you an idea as they're double stacked and they go for a half a mile, you realize how much is moved still by rail.
Straight ahead, let's kind of continue this conversation, Dave. So let's play what if. What if there is a stoppage, a work stoppage, a supply chain interruption? Are you into resale?
I love the resale market.
You do? Selling stuff?
Are
you like moonlighting like out the back of your trunk or what?
I buy used stuff all the time.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you're not alone. Let's have that discussion. That market is booming. I'll tell you by how much next.
Dave and Dujanovic. Get a quick blast of news each morning.
From Ukraine to Utah County.
You'll hear it first.
And accurately.
On KSL.
Listen weekdays between 5 and 9 to Tim and Amanda.
Utah's morning companions for news. The BYU Cougars are on the court.
Spencer, step back. Three.
Got it!
Every Cougar game, every block, and every jam is live right here. Wednesday, it's BYU-USC. Pre-game is at 2 and tip-off at 3 on Utah's legacy home of the Cougars. KSL News Radio. Dave and Dujanovic.
I just jumped off the phone with Justin Finch, ABC News correspondent back in Washington, D.C., talking about the potential for this railway strike. The potential's on the horizon. Of course, we'll keep you updated if it happens. And you may know because you can go to the store and you won't see any toilet paper because there will be a supply chain shortage again. We all know what that's about. It could be a Bah Humbug Christmas if we see this, Dave.
I don't buy it. I hope not, because I think Congress has to step in and prevent it. You can't shut down the railways. You just can't let it happen.
Some of the major retailers have already been bracing for a not-so-fantastical Christmas shopping season, mainly because of inflation. I heard the numbers come out earlier this week. Last week, I was listening to Jeff Kaplan in the afternoon and talking about Target warning of a drop in holiday sales. So I think it's going to be kind of a wonky holiday season anyway. But this is where re-commerce comes in. Have you heard of re-commerce?
No.
Okay. I hadn't either until I was listening to Utah's Morning News. ABC News' Jim Ryan called, talked about e-commerce, re-commerce, not e-commerce, Deb, re-commerce. That is like resale stuff. It's what we would call the thrift store back in our day.
Online, there is a growing presence as well. GoodwillFinds.com is booming, and it's selling all sorts of stuff. Re-commerce grew by about 15% in 2021. I think a lot of people expected that after the pandemic, money was flowing a little more freely perhaps, but that's not the case. People are still visiting resale shops, either in person or online.
Yeah, if you're in that business right now, sales are up.
Well, we have a booming market and have had for a very, very long time here in Utah. We have Deseret Industries. We have KSL Classifieds. We have Facebook Marketplace. This has been something that has been part of Utah for a very, very long time, where you think, oh, you know what? I don't need this new. Let's see if I can get it cheaper somewhere else.
Are you that guy?
I am 100%
really?
That guy. Totally. Yeah, especially for big ticket items. So I can't remember the last time I paid like full price for a couch. I'm always getting somebody's leftovers.
You go for anything.
Yeah. No, couch, chair. I think half my house is furnished with your stuff that that you're like, "Ah, I'm done with this."
Well, you're in good company with a lot of youngsters. The younger age group. Tim asked Jim this morning, Jim Ryan of ABC, when he called in, he said, look, I think it was his grandson or something, wants to go thrifting, like go digging through the thrift bins, loves it. He's a teenager. All of his friends, they all drive around to these stores and check out what they've got. And actually, Jim said, with the younger generation, it's not just about saving money.
there's something else at work here. Listen.
The kids are very socially aware. They're aware of threats to the planet and to the environment, and they want to use things to the maximum, right? Until you can't use it anymore. Instead of tossing that old pair of jeans or that old desk lamp into a landfill, why not use it until it doesn't have any more use to it at all? So that is feeding into this as well. Yeah, you can get stuff cheap, you can find a bargain, but you're also helping to sustain the planet.
That's interesting because I really don't look at it that way. That's not my lens. I don't look at it like, oh, you know, we can breathe life into this and keep it out of the landfill. I just look at it as, oh, that's something cool that I can get for a bargain.
Do your kids read commerce?
Oh, you know, I wouldn't say they do. They don't have like really expensive tastes, but it's not like they're, you know, looking. They want the new iPhone, right? They don't want the iPhone 8. So as far as clothes, I don't know. That's not really something we've really delved into as far as the clothing market either.
Really? Because when my kids were...
That's your jam?
Oh, totally. Totally. They wanted the new, you know, $200 jeans. I'm like, Mom ain't got $200. I mean, I don't have $200. And plus, there's three of you. Do your multiplication tables. That's $600. Do your dad and I look like we got $600 laying around? No.
For pants.
And that's one pair of jeans each. I mean, come on.
Unless you're wearing those pants every single day, all month long.
So we would take them to the secondhand store for that, for sure. It is what it is. You're not going to pay $200 for a pair of jeans that they're going to grow out of in 2 weeks. You're going to get them at the secondhand store for $25 or $30, and then you're going to stretch them out.
Make
so they
sure
keep
they
wearing
fit.
Them. And this market has grown. It has shot up. Re-commerce has grown 15%, which is twice as fast as the retail market. So it tells me retailers got some competition.
Yeah, and I think what you see when you have that kind of competition, a couple things happen. The re-commerce prices, they start creeping up.
Yes.
And then the new prices start coming down. It's part of what we saw, again, during the pandemic, what happened with the car market. Used cars went through the roof.
It's interesting you brought up used cars because this got me thinking. I'm really surprised that you're as into it as you are. I didn't paint you as a Deseret Industries shopping kind of guy. Because I was there the other day. I'm totally on board with that. I just bought a chair off Facebook Marketplace this weekend. Maybe you saw it hanging out of the back of my trunk as I was driving down the freeway. We had it strapped in good. I thought about calling you. You've got the truck.
I got the truck.
It was Saturday night and you were busy with your family. But I feel like you owe me. You owe me that.
I'm sure,
but anyway,
I
got home safely. It's all good. Got it bungeed in. It was safe. But it was a third of the price. I would have paid for it brand new. It's practically brand new.
Yeah.
But I thought, where's your line in the sand, David, with used stuff? Like, you want me to put my line in the sand out there first while you think? I feel like we need a little Jeopardy thought process music here. Do you need? Okay. I won't buy pajamas.
Wimp. A bathing suit.
I will not.
Hey, I love that swimsuit. Can I have that one?
This swimsuit. Thanks for filling that blanket. I wasn't going to bring that up. I'm glad you did. I will not buy a swimsuit secondhand. I will not buy pajamas.
Hey,
I just cannot
get
myself. That
Speedo looks great on you. Can I purchase that?
But I bought my Halloween costume.
Yeah.
Secondhand. Totally. Yeah. And I looked amazing. We dressed up as our boss. So I looked incredible. I won the contest. I actually won the Halloween costume contest here.
Yeah, you
so
dressed
you know.
Up like your boss.
Yeah.
We call that career roulette. Like, good luck.
So what's
See
your,
how this goes
what's
over.
What's your line in the sand?
I think a bed. Like, I'm not sure I'm not sure I'm sleeping in someone else's bed. Like, it's bad enough at a hotel. Like, I'm not sure I can.
But yeah, shoes?
Oh, yeah.
Shoes for
shoes,
sure.
Absolutely.
Because you have a hard time finding shoes anyways. I doubt you'll
do it. Oh, I totally. I've purchased shoes.
Secondhand?
Yeah, secondhand, yeah.
Size 14s?
Size 15s. 14s easy to get. Size 15s, not so easy.
I purchased dishware.
Yep.
I have no shame in buying somebody else's, I was going to say pot, but that sounds bad. That's not what I mean.
Debbie. I meant like, Debbie. That's frowned
like
upon.
Double boiler, that kind of dishes. Probably won't buy your silverware secondhand.
I'd buy silverware. Come on.
You use
other people's silverware all the time, every time you go to their house.
This necklace I'm wearing, it's secondhand. This sweater I'm wearing, it is secondhand. I got it for $5. It's cute as can be. But here's how UC Berkeley, actually, a lot of these colleges have these secondhand stores. I didn't look it up. We probably have them here in Utah. But we'll just use UC Berkeley. We're going to go to the online thrift store there. Their thrift store site, Dave, breaks it down that this is families across the board are shifting to shopping secondhand. And not only just clothing, but secondhand furniture, electronics, and household items as well. So this is a thing. And I think this could be a big thing if we see another supply chain shortage, especially around the holidays. I mean, we kind of skated a little bit with COVID, because it happened after the holidays in 2020, and then we had a few months to recover. Would you ever, final word, ever buy a secondhand gift for Christmas or for Hanukkah or whatever the occasion may be, a birthday?
All the time.
Really?
Every year we buy secondhand stuff. What? Absolutely. Yeah, this is like my go-to.
And your kids don't call you out on it?
No, they just want the goods. If it's in good shape, they love it.
Oh. Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Well, if you've been out to the new Salt Lake City airport, you know the hike, it's long, especially compared to our old airport. We certainly heard the complaints here. I might have complained a time or two too out loud. So KSL 5 flew Alex Cabrera around the country. He flew about the country to measure how our airport walk stacks up to other airports. The story aired last night at 10. It's phenomenal.
Phenomenally bad or
no?
Phenomenally.
Because you complain about something.
Yeah.
Right? And then you find out, oh, well, people in other states got it a lot worse.
No, it's funny because I think we've all been in these airports. You know, whether it's if you're in Atlanta, you're taking a train like from terminal to terminal. It is just enormous. But there's no getting around it. When you go to Salt Lake International, there's a few gates where you're going to be hiking.
Alex Cabrera of KSL 5 live on the line. So, Alex, I remember walking through the Detroit airport years ago, and I thought, is this thing ever end? Am I ever going to get to where I need to go? And that didn't even make the longest hike list.
Right, and Detroit has a few trains you can take to make that hike a little shorter, Debbie. So no, if I remember right, Detroit wasn't in the top five.
Yeah.
And looking at the list, I remember I think Salt Lake came in sixth or seventh place in the country as far as our longest walk, which is from 0.64 miles. And everybody says, oh, it's a couple miles, it's a mile. And truly, the furthest gate coming from the security area there is 0.64 miles.
Okay, so, Alex, yes, how did you come up with this number? Did you walk it off? How does this work?
Yes, walked it off. Also got maps on how long the distances were from the airports. And also, the Wall Street Journal recently did a feature on airports all across the country where they measured things like Wi-Fi speeds and restaurant options, parking availability, things like that. And one of their metrics was maximum walking distance. And all the numbers kind of matched up. I mean, I'm a shorter guy than you, Dave, so my stride isn't as far as you. But, yeah, it's all about 0.64 miles, give or take, maybe a little bit here and there. So we're not looking at a mile in Salt Lake.
Yeah, right. And a mile uphill both ways in the snow to Concourse B.
Right.
I did the math on it. That's a 10 to 12-minute walk. That's doable.
Also, you know, and we chatted with the airport director about this, and he admits, Bill Wyatt, that this isn't the optimal layout. He knows it's a longer walk than the old airport. That's going to change in a couple of years when they build the central tunnel. You know, as you come out of security and you make a right and you see all those restaurants there, that's where the central tunnel is going to be. You can take that tunnel to get directly to the B gates. So your future longest walk to get to the B gates is going to be about a quarter mile, give or take. Now, the reason why they didn't do the central tunnel first when the airport opened is because Salt Lake had a unique position where they were building this new airport while still operating the old airport pretty much on the same site. And this central tunnel is going to go where the old D-Conk or the old D-Gates and the E-Gates at the old airport, it would have went right through that, and they couldn't shut down those gates while still operating. So the only way to do it was to build this mid-concourse tunnel, the Pioneer Trek that we all joke about, to get passengers to those D-Gates. But it is going to reduce the number of steps in 2 years. So, yes, it's not optimal. We hear it all the time, but it's not permanent.
0.64 does not That's sound right. like very much, but – when you know you're wearing flip-flops because you know right. you want them easy on, easy off through TSA, and you're sure. carrying bags, 0.64 feels like a lot more. How much of that 0.64, which is the longest route in Salt Lake International, how much of that is like moving walkways where you can just totally be lazy?
Right, there are a few moving walkways. Well, I think to get to where that yellow B gate sign is, I think there are three moving walkways in the A concourse, and then there are a couple of walkways when you get there to the tunnel. So there are some moving walkways, but they're not that – I mean, walking is still a little faster. I was doing both, and I think with people kind of on those moving walkways, you go faster if you're walking, or in some cases we saw some people running so they don't miss their flight.
Right. I've done that.
So yeah, it is longer, and I think part of it also is you can see – how far your walk is. I think when you make that left to start going down A and you get down the escalator and you see how far that tunnel is, it just looks far.
Yeah. Like,
whereas with the old airport, there were corners and curves and you meander a little bit. It didn't have that visual like,
it tricked you. It tricked you. Yeah, you just kept walking. Alex Cabrera live on the line. KSLTV.com has his story posted right now. When I came into the show this morning, it was the top story on KSLTV.com. And he walked the airport. Okay, before we let you go, we got about 60 seconds left because I gotta chat this one out with Dave. Minneapolis, according to the Wall Street Journal, was the longest walk at 0.83. And then you've got Las Vegas at number two. I've flown into Vegas so many times. I feel like it's a super crowded airport, especially if you're trying to get out of there on a Sunday, but not a super long walk. But how does Charlotte and Miami and JFK, how do they all play into this? JFK makes sense to me, but Charlotte?
Right. Charlotte. And, you know, I didn't go to Charlotte for this story, but I've been to Charlotte before. Yeah, there are some long walks in Charlotte. You go down this, they're not spread out like parallel terminals the way Salt Lake is. It's kind of like a hub system where you got to go down one long concourse to get to the central hub and then go down another long concourse. Yeah, I knew Charlotte was long, but I didn't realize it was that long until I looked at these numbers that the Wall Street Journal did. I was like, oh, yeah, it's pretty long.
Minneapolis, though, 0.83 miles. My goodness.
Did you hike that one? Did you hike it for the story?
Yep. Did the step counter and everything, yes. And, you know, it's also, we were looking at maximum walking distance. I think Dallas-Fort Worth, their longest trek is about 2 miles, but that includes a bunch of trains. So it's really, how do you measure? Are you measuring time to get somewhere, maximum mm-hmm. walking distance period? We were looking at pure maximum walking distance simply because that's what we hear about all the time with the new Salt Lake Airport.
Alex, great story. Thanks so much for jumping on the line with us and talking
right,
it out.
Okay.
And, I'll get you a new pair of tennis shoes for Christmas. Apparently, you walked them off because you're walking all over creation. I mean, they went to Minneapolis. He went to Phoenix, which I think is down on the list a little bit. And Salt
Lake.
They were in eighth place.
But basically as long as Salt Lake.
0.61.
Yeah.
So it's a 10 to 12 minute walk. Stop your babying. Well, although I will say, if you're taking a boatload of kids with you, if you are in a wheelchair, if you need assistance because you have some sort of an injury, that 0.64 miles might as well be 10 miles.
Yeah. And I think when you and I are traveling, are you arrive late? As late as possible kind of person, or do you arrive early?
Oh, no. I'm first one there.
Oh, I am.
Dave, I can't.
Habitually late.
I can't.
Like, last guy on the plane late.
Stop it. Yeah. We hate you.
I know.
We literally are. You're the problem. You are the problem.
We
held up a flight once. We were going on vacation, and you know how that vacation starts when one of you wants to be there early and the other one is you.
Yeah.
It doesn't care when you get there, and you held up the flight. This is when they still held up flights. Nowadays, they just slammed the door. Oh, this was in the 90s. I mean, they don't hide. After 9/11, they're like, the door slams shut, you're done. You can find another flight, you can walk to your destination. We ain't waiting for you. No, they held up the flight, and we got the evil eye from all the passengers. It was, we'll never be late for another flight. What's your cutoff though when driving? Like, when do you decide? Like, you hear Alex's story, it takes 12 minutes to walk here, 15 minutes or 20 minutes through security. You got to park the car in long term, so you got to hop on the bus and get you to the terminal. And then you got to also drive to the airport. What's your cutoff to decide do I fly or do I drive? What is your cutoff time in the car?
You want me to tell you, or should I save it?
Why don't you save it and let's take phone calls?
Because everyone has a cutoff, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not driving any further than St. George or Vegas, whatever it might be.
Dude,
like,
I know people who fly to St. George. Like, have you done the math on that? You could have been down there and back by the time you board the flight. How far are you willing to drive before you decide to book an overpriced flight? Right?
What's
your cutoff? 801-575-TALK. 801-575-TALK. Let's road trip straight ahead.
Genevieve.
Dave and Genevieve.
KSL5 Television's Alex Cabrera's report about the long airport walks. By the way, we do not have the longest airport walk here at Salt Lake City International. It's only 0.64 miles to get to Concourse B, which is the longest walk. So it'll take you 10 to 12 minutes, but everybody's complaining about it. It turns out Minneapolis has the longest walk. But then you ask the question, Dave, what's your cutoff? How long are you willing to drive in a car before you're like, that's too long. I got to get a flight, and I'm going to walk the 0.64 miles if I have to Concourse B.
The airport experience absolutely plays into decision whether or not.
Awesome.
So can I find parking? Mm-hmm. How long does it take me to get to the terminal? How long am I going to wait? How long is the flight? Because once I start doing the math, I start realizing I'm not saving that much time. And it's far more expensive to fly, typically, than it is to drive.
Stop it.
Easy.
Okay.
Way more expensive.
CNBC reporting that airline ticket prices are up on average 25%, which outpaces inflation. Ouch. But then if you fly, you got the car rental situation going on the other end, unless you plan on Ubering it all around the town. It's walkable, or you can take some sort of public transportation. Here's the good news. Car rental prices are down 3.5%.
Come on.
From October of last year.
3.5%.
This is CNN. I'm just telling you as it is. It's the facts, man. It's just the facts. However, in fairness to you, rental car prices overall from 2019 are up 46%.
Yeah, they're up 46%. But they're only – like I gained 50 pounds over COVID, but now I'm down 3 this month.
So do those issues at all factor into your decision to drive?
Absolutely. Because
if you're – it's not just Dave Noriega behind the wheel of the family truckster – heading to California. You got the whole crew with you.
Well, I've done it both ways. I've driven all by myself, and I've made the decision to drive because I don't mind driving. I mean, I don't love it, but I don't hate it. But I will tell you, my number, though, and I think everybody has a number. Like, I will drive 4 hours to St. George, or I'll drive 5 hours to St. George. But, yeah, I'm not going to fly to St. George. I will absolutely do that.
Okay.
I will do Vegas, which is about 7 hours.
Okay.
I will go.
You're really living on the edge here.
This is where I draw the line.
Vegas.
Any further than California.
Oh.
I can't. 11 hours to California.
Specific, okay.
Like LA.
It's like San Francisco. Okay. Yeah. Like LA would be 10 or so, right? Yeah. 11 hours.
How fast do you drive?
So I did the math because this is what factors in. In my decision, and I'll tell you in a minute how far I'm willing to drive, is what the airfare compares to my gas, that mileage I'm going to get, and how much I'm going to have to fill up my tank.
Okay.
So I did the math this morning for you. My car, Salt Lake City, to Los Angeles. Cost me $200 round trip and gas.
Okay.
I was like, woohoo, I'm driving. But then I went onto my Delta app and I said, you know, I'm not going to fly during the holidays. Why would I? That's ridiculous. I don't have to. I'll say I went to LA in January, early January. $193 on Delta round trip. So it's cheaper, $7 cheaper for me to fly to LA than to get into my car and drive. And I'm like, I'm an all-star when it comes to driving. I can drive. But I might have to get a hotel room on the way, especially if I leave here.
If you're driving.
Right.
Yeah.
If I leave here, I've been up since 4 in the morning. I do the whole show with you. It's very high energy to keep us in line. And I'm just exhausted by the time I hit the car. And then I'm on the road for 11 hours. That's a recipe for. So I disagree with you, Dave. I'm going to be glass half full on this one. I think it is. It can be as cheap to fly as it is to drive.
Well, you selected a very, very affordable flight. That was convenient to make your point. Like, it's only $193 to California. All right, Caitlin Johnston, our producer, joins us right now. Caitlin, let's pick something a little more extreme on the other end. How much does it cost to fly to Vegas if I want to go to the Taylor Swift concert?
Well, so I checked this just 5 minutes ago for the first time in like a week. The cheapest flight for a Friday, $783 through Delta. That's ridiculous.
Is that one
for
way
Vegas.
Or round,
this is,
round
this
trip?
Is round trip.
What month?
This is March 24th. It's the Friday I'm looking at. It's not even any better on a Thursday. It's still $600. So I was taken back by that, and it goes up to 1,023.
So will you be driving?
I will be driving. I calculated that as I was just sitting here, and my math might be wrong, but this generator says that it would cost me $113 round trip to drive to Vegas.
In gas.
And I have a total of four people, including myself, going, so we're going to be driving.
Okay, so what is your, is Vegas your max? Is that as far as you're going
to
drive?
I'm kind of on the California side with
Dave.
If I have the time to allow for it. I don't mind a road trip, but flying's a lot easier. So.
Yeah, you got to build in some travel days, like a travel day there, a travel day when you get back. All right, Gail and Logan, do you have a limit? Like, you're not driving any further than what before you buy a flight?
Well, I agree with what you're saying, is that, yeah, California seems to be maybe the max or whatever, but there's also other people have other things to think about, food-wise. You know, I drove from Layton. This is before pandemic because, you know, gases were a little better then, in a motorhome to Key West. And the main reason why I did, it was cheaper to get my tickets for my three kids and my husband and I to fly to Key West for Thanksgiving week was far too much. And it was cheaper. And I had
Key West, Florida?
I did.
Mom
to Florida?
Of the year. I'm sorry, mom of the decade. That is amazing.
But I have a child with special needs.
Which makes you even more amazing.
It was going to be easier in that motorhome.
Yeah, for
to
sure.
Feed him, to go to the bathroom.
Sure.
Anything.
Right.
And when I got there, it was cheaper for me because my family had rented a house, so I parked in the driveway. I didn't have any cars.
Oh, yeah. I would totally.
So where to stay.
I would do the same thing. I would do the same thing, Gail. Just pull up in the RV, plug in, and start cooking right there. I mean, put out the mats, put out the chairs, build a campfire. I'm with you. That is an amazing story.
First of all, Gail, you totally cheated. Obviously.
No,
I mean, RV traveling is totally different. I'm talking about like 1997 Honda Civic you're squeezing the entire family into.
U tires. You all know U tires, right? Utires.com. I was looking for surveys because I wanted to know what's the average, what's the cutoff point for most Americans? They surveyed almost 1,300 American drivers. The sweet spot for a road trip. You ready for this?
Okay.
13 hours.
Oh, I'm right in the sweet spot.
13 hours, yeah. You know, I've traveled the whole country.
Yeah.
In a van. Yeah. With my mom and my
sister.
Down
by a river, yep.
Yep. No, we've traveled the whole country. So I love road trips, and I have no problem. Banff, I think it was 2019, went to Banff, Canada, and I would have kept driving. I didn't have enough vacation time. I had to come around 14 hours from Salt Lake City.
Oh, that's a chunk.
And that's one way.
Oh, man.
Right? That's not round trip. It ain't 7 hours.
I thought my 11 hours was
been bad. All over Montana multiple times via car. I mean, Montana's great because it's a small regional airports, but at some point, you know, you're just flying about Montana. You might as well just drive it. It's beautiful anyway. Been up to Idaho, been to Seattle by car. I've been to San Francisco by car. You name it.
One of the things that bothers me the most about it is how expensive, again, the rental cars are. Because if I fly there, great. But now I got to get a rental car on top of that. If it's just me flying, you know, and you can't share costs with gas.
I just told you rental car prices have come down 3.5%.
But overall, the last couple of years, how high is it?
Yeah. They've increased 41%.
There you go.
46%, actually, over the last couple of years. Boyd Matheson walking in studio right now. He's going to jump back into this potential rail strike talk that's going on back in Washington, D.C. next.
Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM at 1160 AM. Dave and Dejanovic have inside sources.
We've been focusing a lot today on this developing story, potential for a railway strike. There's an influential group of railroad workers. It's a union that voted against the Biden-brokered deal. And so there's this potential. And now we want to ask Boyd Matheson, Dave, will Congress get involved?
Yeah. I'll tell you this right now. I am so over the supply chain issue. Like whether it's COVID, whether it's the railways, whether it's, you know, the diesel, I don't care anymore.
30% of the freight moves by rail in the United States. That's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff.
A whole lot of stuff.
Yeah. How will Congress have to get involved in this, Boyd?
So I think it's going to be interesting. Congress obviously doesn't want to get involved in this because it would be a change. I know. They love to stand on the side and pop the popcorn there. But you remember President Biden sort of spiked the ball back in September saying, I took care of it. I handled it. We're all good. But what he had handled was the front end of the negotiations and kind of got it to a point where then the unions could go take it to their members to have a vote. So what we've actually been seeing over the last couple of months is one by one, you've sort of seen some of the unions say, not thrilled about that, and they voted it down. So three have already, and this fourth one is the big one, which just really puts it over the edge in terms of any opportunity to actually get it done. And it's actually not just a pay issue. It's actually a leave issue. It's a sick days kind of
issue. Work-life balance is how they're framing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Do they have all the negotiating power right now? Because we're so desperate. It's the holidays. We all need our stuff. Is this the labor basically realizing we will never be in a stronger place to negotiate than right now?
Yeah, maximum leverage point is what this is. And also knowing that the politicians from the executive branch with the president and Congress don't want to get in the middle of this. They don't want to be the ones that stole Christmas. So nobody wants to be that person or that group. And so I think that's where the unions are saying, yeah, this is our chance to finally lean in and see if we can't get some of the other concessions that we were hoping for.
Boyd Matheson in studio with us. A little early. His show's on from 1 to 3, but he joins us every day right here at 11:05 to work through the top stories and fill us in, give us his insights out of Washington, D.C. You spoke with a reporter, Alex Dougherty, from Politico, about why Congress may get involved.
Democrats especially have been very hesitant to want to show any, you know, ability to get involved. They would rather not get involved at all. And Republicans also would prefer not to get involved, although Republicans have been a little bit more clear that they would prefer to see a presidential review board that over the summer came up with a list of recommendations as both sides were negotiating, basically taking those recommendations and putting them into law. That's something that the railroads would find acceptable. It's something unions would not find acceptable.
Let's dive into that detail a little deeper, Boyd. If they do step in, if Congress steps in, what would they force people to go back to work?
Not quite so much the force all the way back to work, but there was this. Here's the really interesting dance. So one of the things that President Biden did that everyone seems very happy with, Democrats and Republicans alike, was he created this review board to go through all of the issues facing the rail industry coming out of the pandemic, dealing with the supply chain breakdowns and all of that. And they came up with this long list of things of here's what we need to have in terms of how we are governed, how we govern the rail industry, and what that should actually look like in terms of what's best for the country. I mean, you also have to think about this. This is a national security issue. One of the fascinating things that Alex shared with me yesterday, and Alex knows more about railroads than anybody on the planet. He is deep into this. He says one of the things we should be watching for in the coming days is the rail companies are very careful in terms of what happens. If they think a strike is coming, they start taking preemptive action. And one of the most important preemptive actions they're going to take has to do with fuel and chemicals, because you can't leave that stuff sitting on a railroad track.
Right.
And so that was one of the things he said, watch for this. If you suddenly see the rail companies pulling stuff off the lines and getting chemicals and fuels and things that are flammable off, that's the first sign. The second sign, of course, will be that you'll start to see some of those cancellations of travel mostly impacting the Northeast.
Well, look, I don't know all of their demands, but when we talk about it, and we've talked about it with ABC News's Justin Finch earlier today, you talked about it yesterday on your show, we're talking about it here again today. If they want sick leave, get them sick leave. I mean, are they asking for 6 months of sick leave, or are they asking for an extra 6 days of sick leave? Where's the context there? I mean, it doesn't sound like it's a money issue this time.
Yeah, which is really interesting. Really interesting from the union standpoint. They're not just saying, hey, this is about higher wages. This is about work-life balance, as you alluded to earlier, Debbie. And so I think the interesting thing will be, how far do they push the leverage? Because there is that tipping point where you push too far, and then suddenly Congress is involved, and not only do you lose leverage, you lose it in a very big way. And that's the thing I don't think anybody really has a good grasp on. How far are the union workers willing to go for those extra sick days? How strong are the rail companies willing to be? And as a result, do they end up with some sort of legislative response that probably nobody's going to be happy with?
Why is this so politically toxic for Congress? Because I would think it would look like Congress sweeps in and takes care of a problem. That seems like more of a win than a loss.
I think it'll be one of those that will be a loss. Because I don't think if Congress does its job, and if they actually go back to the review board that was set up, that everybody cheered for and said, yep, this is the right way to do it. And if they adopt a lot of the things that are in the review board recommendations, they're going to make everybody mad. You talk about equal opportunity offenders. They will be big time. And the rail companies are big donors to the unions, and they're big donors to members of Congress on the right. And so there's a whole lot of political dollars and cents floating around in a few little sick days there.
I know we have about 30 seconds, but boil it down at the kitchen table. What does it mean for the average Utah family if this does happen?
Yeah, if you're going to have the disruption of goods and services, which are going to make prices go up. Again, my biggest worry is national security issues. Think of all the things that move on rail, and a lot of those have to do with the defense industry, and you can't just leave that stuff sitting around.
I also read that another supply chain shortage, if this strike does happen along the railways, it could push us into a deeper recession. We're already anticipating a recession at the beginning of the year. Some analysts say it'll be just a minor blip. Others say, it'll be a deep recession, but this could nudge us in that direction a little bit faster.
Yeah, it's one more factor. I think we're in a recession. I think we need to be honest about that.
Yeah.
How deep it goes will be an interesting thing. This could be one more little tipping point moment that we've got to keep our eye on.
Boyd Matheson, thank you. Host of Inside Sources from 1 to 3.
Who's the leader of the Republican Party? I want you to think about that. Who is the leader of the Republican Party right now? Let's get Taylor Morgan, political strategist, on the line with us straight ahead. He's also host of KSL at Night, but we got him out of bed early. He's calling the show in 4 minutes. He's going to tell us who he thinks the leader of the political party is, and I was quite surprised to hear his take.
Dave and Janik.
Who is the leader right now of the Republican Party?
We know that the Republican Party vastly underperformed expectations this year in the midterm elections, right? I mean, that's settled. That is settled. We've got infighting going on. They're looking in the mirror and saying, okay, how can we fix things? But without a leader, who's going to get you there? Who's the leader, Dave?
Oh, it's President Trump. President Trump is the leader. It's a lot like if you look at the sports world, who is the lead? Whoever won the championship the year before. And President Trump is the last one to win. Now, he lost, I get that, but he's still running. He's still involved. Mm. He's still holding rallies. And until somebody upsets him, and I mean that because everything upsets President Trump, but until somebody
unseats
him,
yeah, okay,
then he is going to continue to be the leader of the party.
Are you saying that out of respect for the presidency? Because that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It just doesn't. I think if you look at it and what's going on in the Republican Party, you have some pretty heavy hitters that are kind of like, Donnie who? Who? Huh? He shouldn't run again. He's going to. He's already announced he's going to run again 2024. But is this just kind of like written in the Constitution somewhere?
No, it's very easy. I'll tell you exactly why President Trump is the leader of the Republican Party right now. His war chest is $122 million.
Oh, it's about money.
Before he even announced, Debbie, he had over $100 million in a war chest. Whoever raises the money is the leader.
The leader of the Republican Party. I always looked at a leader and thought there was somebody, you know, I could really get behind and rally behind. I think the Republicans are having a hard time with that now. I think they don't know who to rally, who they're going to, who's going to help their party succeed in the next election. I don't know. Taylor Morgan, KSL at Night host, also the executive director of Count My Vote, partner at Morgan May Public Affairs. You got all kinds of titles, but do you have an opinion on this, Taylor? Am I wrong? Is Dave might be right in this. I'm not really buying that President Trump is a leader anymore.
This isn't easy for me to say, Debbie, but normally I come on this show and I agree with Dave, but this time I think he's got it wrong. I think President Trump was the leader of the Republican Party up until this midterm election. And more specifically, up until Mitch McConnell became the leader of the party last week when he beat Trump proxy Rick Scott, senator from Florida, in the vote for minority party leader in the Senate, 37-10. Mitch McConnell is now the leader of the Republican Party.
What are you talking about? Mitch McConnell is as dynamic as President Trump is. Like, whether you like his style or not, there's no question he is dynamic. You swing the polar opposite and you land on Mitch McConnell. How can that guy be the leader of the party?
Look, Dave, Mitch McConnell isn't the most exciting guy. I get that. But the future of the Republican Party is going to be controlled by the sweater vest country club Republicans. That is the future. We saw this play out in this cage match between Trump and McConnell in the form of this leadership vote. And Dave, it wasn't even close. Now, to put this in perspective, Rick Scott was head of the National Republican Senatorial Committee. Rick Scott is the one who burned through millions and millions of Republican dollars to support low-quality Trump-endorsed candidates in the primary. These candidates, of the Trump-endorsed candidates that Rick Scott funneled millions to, only two of the 15 won in closely contested states, many of them swing states that Joe Biden barely won in 2020. Mitch McConnell, all along, he called it. He was right. He said these are low-quality candidates, and because of these low-quality Republicans, we will not take back the Senate. He was right, and he will now lead the Republican Party forward, as they hope,
to take back the White House and eventually the Senate. And Dave, we saw this last week when a letter from nearly 90 Utah elected officials, all Republicans, broke up with Donald Trump.
Yeah, they did dump him, didn't they? They dumped him in favor of Ron DeSantis, sending Florida Governor Ron DeSantis that letter asking him to start an exploratory committee for the White House. But look, I don't necessarily agree with you either, Taylor. I'm not 100% sold on Mitch McConnell as the leader of the Republican Party. But let's just play for a minute. Let's just play pretend. And let's play like Team Dave is always right. Like Dave is always right. Dave can do no wrong. And let's pretend that President Trump is the true leader of the Republican Party currently, despite his midterm losses, despite all the lawsuits against him, despite the fact that he's under investigation for those alleged documents that ended up allegedly in a golf closet somewhere at Mar-a-Lago, allegedly.
That's a lot of allegedly.
Let's pretend he is. What happens to the Republican Party if they continue to follow Donald Trump into 2024?
They will lose. And we have seen evidence of that. It is now clear. And that is why Republicans across the country are refocusing to get behind a new leader of the party. Now, you could also argue that Ron DeSantis is the de facto leader of the Republican Party, but perhaps I am using the word leader a little too literally in terms of who has the most power in the Republican Party in the country. And you could say Kevin McCarthy, but ultimately all eyes are on Mitch McConnell given this leadership win in the Senate. And going forward, it may be Ron DeSantis, it may be Tim Scott, it may be any number of people, but right now, Mitch McConnell is calling the shots.
Taylor Morgan, thank you for joining us. KSL at Night host. I appreciate it. It's a different way to look at it. It really is, Debbie. It's a different way to look at it because when you think of a leader, you think of somebody that's charismatic, that can motivate and energize the base. That is not Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell is extremely powerful. Boyd Matheson talks about it all the time. The McConnell machine. He can basically make anyone he wants a king. He's a kingmaker, right? He is not going to be the Republican nominee for president. But that person doesn't get any backing unless Mitch McConnell signs off.
Look, if the Republicans continue to allow President Trump to be their leader, they're in trouble in 2024. I mean, how many times do you have to repeat the same scenario and have it fail? Right? I mean, if you want to get back in control of the country, in control of the White House, and put a Republican behind the desk at the Oval Office, you can't repeat what happened in the last presidential election. You can't repeat what just happened in the midterms, right? If you use the analogy I think earlier about team leaders, and NFL champs, and they're the leader, their quarterback is the leader. Look. I mean, how many times does a team have to lose before they're like, we need new leadership, right? They fire the coach like that. They just fire the coach. I mean, he's there on a Sunday, and by Monday, he's out. So how does that apply here? I mean, why hang on to President Trump? What good is that?
Well, I think part of the problem is President Trump refuses to move forward. And if he can move on, I think there's a winning strategy there. Even with President Trump. I'll say, are we taking calls on this?
Yeah, take calls. Like, who is the leader?
I'm going to explain why I think President Trump could still be the leader.
Okay.
And how he could move forward and how he could win, even though he's had some very recent losses. Mm. This is where I think President Trump could move forward and the Republican Party could still rally around Donald Trump.
801-575-TALK. Weigh in. Who is the leader in your mind of the Republican Party? Is it Mitch McConnell? Is it Donald Trump? Is it Ron DeSantis de facto? 801-575-TALK. Taking your calls, and Dave will weigh in with his thoughts in 4 minutes.
Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Who is the leader of the Republican Party? We're taking your live phone calls.
Who do you think it is? 801-575-TALK. Phone lines are open. Calls are stacking up. Dave, who do you think the true leader is right now of the Republican Party?
In order to make America great and glorious again, I am tonight announcing my candidacy for President of the United States.
Dave, your voice has changed.
The MAGAGA guy. The MAGAGA guy is the leader of the Republican Party, and he will be until somebody beats him out.
That's right. I forgot that he is Make America Great Again and Again. What is
MAGAGA? Make America Glorious and Great Again.
In order to make America great and glorious again, I am tonight announcing my candidacy for President of the United States.
It's a little trickier to fit on a hat. That's why you just put MAGAGA.
This is what marketing people do, right? They just change it up a little bit. So you got to go run out and buy a new hat.
Now, there's a lot of people that are not happy with that hot take from me. I get it.
Super edgy take.
There are 90 politicians in Utah that sent a letter to Ron DeSantis begging him to throw his hat in the ring so that he can be the leader of the party and not President Trump. But I think the fact is, he raises money. He has influence. He demands media attention.
He's back on Twitter.
You may not like him. You may not want him to be your leader, but he is your leader.
Taylor Morgan, KSL at Night, he's also a political consultant. He phoned in a few moments ago, and he totally disagreed with you. In fact, I think he said he was on Team Debbie on this one, that Donald Trump is no longer the leader of the Republican Party. We saw what happened in the midterms. It was not good for the Republicans. He also lost the White House to President Joe Biden. Not good for the Republicans. He believes Mitch McConnell is the true leader right now of the Republican Party. And you said as we were heading off into the sunset for a few minutes before we came back from break, you have an argument to be made for President Trump. Do you want to take the phone calls first, or you want to make your argument first?
Well, look, start dialing if you want to chime in on this. 801-575-TALK, 801-575-TALK. But yeah, I think when you look at President Trump, the biggest problem he has right now is he keeps living in the past. I think there is a way forward for President Trump, if he's willing to take it, that Republicans could get behind. This living in the past, 2020, the election, all of that has got to go away if President Trump wants to recapture the energy and the excitement of the Republican Party. This is how you do it. He's like, you know how I feel about the past elections? I'm over it. I'm moving on. I'm not addressing it anymore. And then you never talk about it again. You say, I've closed that chapter. And then you followed up with, so, you guys, America, you wanted Joe Biden. You got Joe Biden. How's that working out for you? Put it on President Biden's shoulders. Are you better off with him than you were with me? Mm-hmm. That's a winning argument with President Trump.
Yeah.
This is what I'm going to do specifically to bring down inflation, to bring down gas prices, to make energy affordable again.
That's excellent, Dave. That's excellent. Well, you honestly need to bundle that up and send that off to President Trump's team.
It will never happen. He will never say, I'm moving past the elections. And that's the first step you have to take.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to get past the denial, in this case, the election denial. Yeah. You got to stick it somewhere where it's never going to resurface again. Agree with you. Well said. Phone calls, 801-575. Pete, you're on the road. Do you agree with Dave, too?
Hey, with Dave. Hey, another thing, at least Trump knows what state he's in, and I'll make you a deal. If Trump doesn't win in 24, I'll come and do a show with you. If Trump wins, you have to come and ride with me on my route for 4 hours.
Wow.
And I'll throw in a dozen donuts.
A dozen donuts? What about an
In-N-Out
burger run, Pete? What about an In-N-Out burger run?
That truck won't make it through the In-N-Out.
Hey, we can go do a burger run, whatever you want.
All right,
Dave is right.
Dave is right.
24.
Yeah, Dave gets the donuts. I'm not a big donut fan, but burgers, absolutely. Pete, great phone call. Thank you so much. I love the energy, as always. Howard from Springville.
Do you see it from Dave's point of view?
Not at all. I think Trump stopped being the leader of the party when he started being Donald Trump. The way he's behaved over the last 2 years has been so ridiculous, not including just his demeanor and everything he was while he was president. I think his worst enemy is himself, and I don't think people will gravitate toward that. And just to throw the gauntlet down, if Trump wins in 2024, this is how convinced I am, Trump wins in 2024, I'll take the two of you to Ruth's Chris.
Oh.
So how's that?
Caitlin, get all the numbers.
I mean, all the stuff you guys are offering is a total conflict of interest for us. We cannot take the deals, guys, but we appreciate the phone calls anytime.
What do you mean we can't take it? Buy my vote, baby. I'm the modern day politician. You give me something, you got my vote.
What? Phone lines. Are we having more phone calls, Gustavo? Gustavo's running the phone lines. Okay.
Furiously putting on hold.
You just cut everybody off, but the KSL text line's lit up. Definitely not Trump. He's such a grump.
Now we're rhyming. Let's not send texts that rhyme, folks. Come on.
I loved it.
This isn't nursery rhyme.
It
this
got
isn't
on the air.
Dr. Seussville.
It got on the air. But you're like, no, Mitch McConnell, not now. He's not the leader of the Republican Party.
I can see the argument being made that Mitch McConnell is the most powerful Republican right now. I absolutely could see that. I don't think that is necessarily leadership. I think you could make the argument that Ron DeSantis is the leader. But again, President Trump is raising hundreds of millions of dollars still on his name, with his backing, with his connections. If you're raising that kind of money, you are the leader. So, Republicans, if you don't want him to be your leader, then you got to go out and choose somebody new. And you've got to throw your full weight behind that person.
Yeah, they're trying. They're trying in Utah. They sent a letter. Almost 90 Republican elected officials sent a letter, a love letter to Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida. Dave, they are trying. They're trying, but you keep getting in the way.
What am I getting in the way for? I'm not doing anything.
You still love Trump.
That's not at all what I said.
Dave's got to get over Trump, too.
I'm not in love. I'm not supporting. I'm saying this is what I see. Holy moly. Debbie's like, I've got all the words. I got a backpack full of words. I'm going to stuff down your throat like a Thanksgiving turkey.
Straight ahead, the respect. Actually, the Respect for Marriage Act, it's moving forward. It's legislation that would recognize any marriage between two people, opposite or same sex. Utah Senator Mike Lee has some concerns.
Mr. President, let's do this the right way, not the wrong way. We need to protect religious freedom.
Dave and Dujanovic.
You can catch info anywhere.
But KSL News Radio is a dependable source.
We invite you to join us weekdays between 5 and 9.
Tim Hughes and Amanda Dixon.
Utah's morning companions for news.
Dujanovic. Dave and Dujanovic. KSL's top national story. Special coverage with Dave and Dujanovic.
The debate over the Respect for Marriage Act. It is moving forward in the Senate. I thought there would be more finality to it by now, but that hasn't happened yet. Might happen after the Thanksgiving break. Senator Mike Lee is concerned. He's concerned with the legislation.
It labels people of good faith as bigots and subjects them to endless harassing litigation and discrimination and threats by that same government that was founded to protect their religious liberty.
And this is very much echoing what was said by Senator Ted Cruz on one of his podcasts that I came across, Debbie, when we're talking about the Respect for Marriage Act.
Any charity that believes marriage is the union of one man and one woman, any charity that does not embrace same-sex marriage, this bill is designed to strip their 501c3 status, to persecute the churches and universities and schools and charities.
And this is why it matters here in Utah. Because you look at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and they have obviously all these beautiful temples scattered across the state. If a same-sex couple wants to get married and say they want to be married inside one of those temples, the church will not allow that. does that leave them open to be sued? Are they breaking the law by doing so?
If the law passes.
Yeah.
If the law, if this becomes codified in federal law. We don't know if that's going to happen yet. Sorry, I put my mic up really hot so I could yell over you. I didn't mean to do that. We don't know if that's going to happen. But I want to take it beyond the borders of Utah, right? I mean, this would affect other churches.
Yeah, it's not just the LDS Church.
I just don't want to point out
any church,
Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Any church that does not believe in same-sex marriage would be potentially at risk, according to Senator Ted Cruz, of getting their tax-exempt status revoked by the federal government, by the IRS. And that tax-exempt status is what it is exactly what it says it is. It makes it so they're tax-exempt. That is a boatload of money. That is so you're kind of hanging that out there as a possibility. That could be scary for organizations.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a threat.
Yeah.
And some churches could financially afford to handle that. They could maybe battle it in court. Other charities, that would just be the end to them. But I think this is the conversation we're trying to figure out is the Respect for Marriage Act has a lot of bipartisan support.
Right.
It will likely pass, and it is likely going to pass soon. Mm-hmm.
Senator Mark Warner from Virginia on Fox News, he thinks that these concerns, Senator Mike Lee, Utah Senator Mike Lee's concerns, Senator Ted Cruz's concerns, are a stall tactic. Let's listen.
Some of the opponents want to do everything they can to run out the clock. I would, again, urge people of goodwill to look not only at the Mormon Church, but look at all of the church organizations that have felt that religious freedom is protected. There is nothing in this bill that would require any faith to marry anyone that they don't want married in their house of worship.
So that's the promise. Senator Mike Lee has offered up an amendment, he said, that would secure that
would protect the churches and charities
that the government couldn't threaten. They couldn't revoke the tax exempt status as a punishment for churches or charities that don't want to perform same sex marriages.
Earlier in our show, during our 9 o'clock coverage of this issue, we asked KSL legal analyst Greg Skordis to weigh into the conversation. Okay. We all know couples, gay couples, or this impacts interracial marriages too. We all know gay couples who are married, right? And if you don't know a gay couple who's married, ask somebody. They don't know. They know somebody, right? I mean, it's just
they certainly
more and
know
more
somebody
common.
That's interracial.
An interracial marriage as well. I have several friends who are in interracial marriages, interracial relationships, moving toward marriage, and so I asked him, why is this federal law needed?
Well, it's needed in part because there has been some hint, Debbie, from the Supreme Court, especially from Justice Clarence Thomas, that we should revisit the decision that was that they entered in 2015, which effectively overturned the Defense of Marriage Act, and would I know I'm not explaining this very well, which would allow that maybe states could outlaw same-sex marriage. And I think Congress is trying to get on top of that and say, no, wait, we're going to codify this into federal law now so that the issue is settled.
And part of what is going on here, Debbie, and I think it's important to have a conversation about this, the Respect for Marriage Act, again, kind of sailed through the House. It looks like it has really a lot of support in the Senate as well. It's interesting to me that Congress is working so well together. Like, this is genuine bipartisan legislation. Now, even Senator Mike Lee, he just wants to tweak it. There's an amendment he wants to add. He doesn't fundamentally want to change the entire law. He just wants to add an amendment, which is very common, right? But the fact that Congress is working together, and it looks like it will likely or probably pass here in the next little bit, that restores my faith a little bit in Congress, because for so long, something like this, that's in the news media, that's contentious, that is, they're figuring it out. They're compromising.
I want to go back to Senator Mark Warner, the Democrat from Virginia, who's on Fox News. I want to play that clip again, Dave, and I want to ask you a question about it.
Some of the opponents want to do everything they can to run out the clock. I would, again, urge
okay,
people.
Run out what clock?
Yeah.
Friends I know who are married, who are gay and in a same-sex marriage, haven't called me up and said, oh, we got to get this done. What clock is the senator or, yeah, Senator Warner talking about? Is it before the new Congress?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. before the House changes leadership power and they control the agenda. So his concern is once the Republicans take over, that they will back burner this legislation.
Then starts really stalling it.
Yeah, and then it goes nowhere. But if they obviously still have the House and the Senate right now, they have the White House, it does have bipartisan support. It's rubber stamped all the way through. You know, it really is something that can get done in this quote-unquote lame duck session.
We have 30 seconds, but we did get a text. I think it's important, and you did such a great job explaining this earlier in the show, Dave. Didn't the Mormon Church endorse this? This is from one of our texters on our text line.
No, it's an important distinction that we need to make. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints said a few things in its statement. They said this approach is the way forward. They didn't endorse the bill. And you will almost never see the church specifically endorse a bill that they say the approach is the way forward. And the approach that they're talking about is maintaining appropriate religious freedom protections. This is what they said. These are their words. Maintain appropriate religious freedom protections while respecting the law and preserving the rights of our LGBTQ brothers and sisters. So is it an out-and-out endorsement of this specific legislation? No. But they say, again, their words, the approach is the way forward.
Maria Chaleos, straight ahead. Update on all your day's news.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.